CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. We all wore, according to the dress code this morning, we all decided to wear black. So I hope that you are also wearing your black this morning while you watch us or listen to us. If you're listening on various podcasting platforms, you're watching us on YouTube this morning live, or you're just watching some kind of a replay. I don't know. It might be 3:30 in the morning for you when you watch this. That's why you can't say, have a great day. Because your day might already be done. All right, this morning, Bulelo and I are joined by an old name and face for people who've been on the Cliff Central train for a long time. Someone who's been a part of our family from the get-go as well. He was there pretty much from year one, and his name is Weza Matomane. How's it, Weza? How are you, man? Nice to see you, by the way.
Oh, good. Thank you so much. The same goes for me as well. Nice to see you guys, too. And it's great to be back here. I mean, it's like such a full circle moment. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's it with you guys in September, because my very, very first show was actually in September.
Oh, yeah?
It was a stand-in for Sia. Yes, Sia Sangwini Finn.
Oh, yeah?
Needed to go to Cape Town or something like that. And then on the 22nd of September, they asked me to please stand in for him. So we had our first show on the 22nd of September.
Now, didn't you do that show with two other guys?
Yes, Lesejo Mampanga. Lesejo and Simpiwe Pedros.
That's right. And you guys, what was your show called?
Well, it had so many different names throughout, you know. So,
and it was
so
on
the first.
It was
one,
on for at least 3 or 4 years, right?
Yes, that's true. That's true. So in the beginning, obviously, because it was a stand-in, we had to assume Sia's name for the show in the beginnings, because the first one was just a stand-in. So that one was Untapped Talent.
Untapped Talent. But by the way, we changed the name of that because we found out that Sia was actually bringing on people he found attractive. And then we started calling. No, really. So it was like a way for him. It was a way for him to hit on guys he thought were attractive. So what we did was we changed.
So that's what the Untapped stood for.
So we actually changed it from Untapped Talent to Tapping the Talent, and that was his show. And so you stood in for him, and then you did your own show because you guys did such a good job of it that we thought, hey, we can't let these people flounder somewhere. Let's give them the show of their own.
Yes, and thanks for the compliment. What happened is that a month later, on the 22nd of October, then we got a call from Cliff Central to say, can you guys come in and do a stand-in for the whole holiday season, because some guys are going away and so on? And we thought, whoa, let's grab this, you know. And sometimes that's how your opportunities come, you know. It first comes as like half a slice, and you just have to make the most of it. So what had happened is we'd come in and had a show called The Study Break, because we thought, hey, maybe people will be studying and they could take the break listening to us. And then it evolved, because closer towards January, I think, is when, you know, the next offer came in to say, hey, guys, how about you just stay on, okay? And then we had to now come up with a new name, and that was Gentleman by Choice.
There we go. That's right. And weren't you guys all studying together or something?
Yes, we were. We were all engineering students.
That's right.
So the two of them did industrial engineering, and I had done chemical engineering. So yes, it was all these engineering minds who were trying to, you know, do something that is not really the status quo.
Well, I remember, like, I think Simpiwe went on to do a bit of an internship at an engineering firm. Lesejo ended up in banking, right?
Yes, that's true.
And you ended up doing, like, full-time voice work, and you ended up with some pretty big campaigns under the belt. Like, I remember hearing your voice on TV and even seeing you in ads. I mean, is that still going on? Because that's a good business if you can get to the level you were at. Everybody says to me, oh, I want to be a voiceover artist because it looks so easy. Or they sound like this. They go, I'd love to be a voiceover artist. He says, yeah, that's going to happen for you. Sure, just hang in there.
Look, actually, it could happen for them too, you know, because there's so many different types of voiceover artists out there, you know. So,
and you used to train people. In fact, you might still do it.
Yeah.
Train people to do voiceovers.
Yes.
But there aren't that many jobs. Uh-huh. There are a lot of people who could do it, but there are only a few jobs available, right?
Actually, it's quite the opposite. There's really? Quite a lot of different types of jobs out there. Yeah, it's really just where you're looking and what you're looking for, because there's international jobs too now. So there's websites where you can actually start doing a lot more international jobs, even locally, because really? Technology has really evolved. Guys, look at us right now. We're at three different spots, yet we can all have a show that is in real time and live. And the voiceover game has also evolved the same way. So people now are listening to you from all over the place.
This is news to me. So I remember voiceovers. Mm. People needed voiceovers mostly for ads and occasionally for games or whatever. Like I did a cartoon, a Disney cartoon once. I did some ads for radio. I did some ads for television where you just do the voiceover and then they pay you. Mm. And everybody seems to think that it's always this huge heap of money. And it's sometimes, I mean, if you get like a pretty big contract with a well-known international advertiser, you could end up being paid quite well. But most of it is like, a couple of hundred or a couple of thousand rand here or there. And that's not to by any means look down on that, because if you can if you can get money for being a voiceover artist, you've done well. So I'm more interested in the business of this, because the way I understood it, there are lots of talented people out there who can do things with their voices. And there are probably a lot of people who would have you on like a podcast or a show like ours. But to actually get paid for it was different, right?
Mm, you're very right. It's just a beautiful thing for me, because I am doing it full time. I'm still doing it full time. I'm training people. Yeah. I'm a full time voiceover artist. I literally am not an engineer, by any means in terms of practice right now. And I think I'm more successful here than I would have been working at a firm, at an engineering firm or something like that. So I've definitely seen that you can create a business out of it, but most of the people approach it wrong. So your agent is not going to get you most of the work. So if you were doing it through an agent, that's probably why there were hundreds sometimes, because they were never supposed to be hundreds, but then obviously an agent has to take their portion too sometimes.
You've done that on your own. I mean, that's what's so amazing. You may have had agents to help you out along the way, but it's kind of your reputation has done the work for you, you know. You now are well known. And people then, they hear you in one ad and they ask, like, can we have that guy from that ad? So tell us about some of the big ones you've done.
Okay, cool. So some of the big ones I've done, I think things that stand out is the Summer Awards, because, I mean, I always grew up watching the Summer Awards, and to be the guy who's doing the nominees for Album of the Year, that was oh, shucks, that's awesome. Me now? Oh, shucks, that's cool.
Right.
You know, doing Super Sport is also really cool, because, I mean, we watch sports all the time. So being that guy who's like, Super Sport Blitz, that was really cool.
That's awesome.
So I'm still doing that. And then some international work. Really cool to do things like for, let's say, a network. I mean, I don't watch these kids shows enough. Cartoon Network, as well as BBC and so on. And this is what I wanted to say regarding the international work. The client would be sitting in let's say in Britain.
Yeah.
Or in the case of Cartoon Network, they were sitting in France,
right.
And I was recording from here in Joburg. So they would direct from that side, and even have these days, even the sound engineer is not in the country sometimes. So the sound engineer could be in New York, the director's sitting in France somewhere, and I'm recording from here.
Now,
editing it live.
What do you need?
What
do you need to do that? Because I'm going to explain to people what it means when someone directs you in a voiceover, because people think you just sit down, read a script, and then they take the first take and they love it. What do you need? You need a good microphone, you need a strong internet connection. And you need a room that's kind of mostly soundproofed, right? Explain how all that works.
So you need to acoustically treat your room. So there's soundproofing is trying to make sure that outside noises don't come in here, okay? Mm-hmm. But then there's also acoustic treatment. So acoustic treatment is putting in foam and different things to either absorb or reflect sound.
And you want to absorb most of that sound so that the only sound coming out of there and into the microphone is the voice, because then they don't have to, on the other side, they don't have to add background noise or fiddle around with it to try and clear up any inconsistencies.
And And not just any noise, but not just any voice, but your first voice, and not the reverb of your voice. Because
right.
when you're in an empty room, like for instance, imagine when you're in the toilet, right? Because mm-hmm. the room is so small, you have a lot of reverb coming back into the mic, and we can hear that. Where are you recording this from? And we don't yeah. want that, that awkward feeling at all. So there's everything from that to those thicker ones in the corners, so that you also don't sound too boomy. Like, I don't know if you've ever had to try and do your podcast in a car before, but usually there's that boom sound, like it sounds too deep.
It's too concentrated almost. So you'll sit there in your studio, and then someone in France will say to you, hello, we would like you to deliver this line. Please, could you say, Mbulalo Tinta is our special guest this morning on the show. And then you deliver the line, and then they go, could you put an emphasis on show? And then you have to do it like 18 times, and it can be really, really annoying.
So the better you are at, first of all, taking direction, and secondly, imagining what they want and being able to really bring that out the first time round, the less painful this is going to be. But if you're not good at that, then you're going to find yourself doing it 18 times. No one wants you to do it 18 times, but when you can't quite figure it out, that's where it's going to happen. Like, let's say, for instance, you're saying, let's say Mbulelo on cliffcentral.com, right. And then you say, no, can you change, can you, instead of saying cliffcentral.com, can you say cliffcentral.com?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Right.
Then I do it again, Mbulelo on cliffcentral.com. So if I'm good at taking the direction, then it's going to be painless.
Well, maybe that's the big difference between you and me, and this is why you've been so successful in this particular field, is because I hated that stuff. Because when you record an ad, you've got some asshole from the ad agency sitting there, and usually they're just trying to justify the fact that they exist and that they've got to get a salary. So they come along to the recording, and then they sit in the room next door to the recording, where they usually have tea and coffee, and they sit on a sofa or whatever, and you're in this little booth, which is soundproofed. And then they keep coming through your ears going, can you just change the tone slightly on you so that it sounds more like you're talking directly to that person? And I was like, you know what, honey? In my head, this is what I, like, in my head, I'm thinking, you know what, you're like 26 years old and you work in advertising, and you're going to tell me how I talk to an audience when I've been doing that for 24 years? Go fuck yourself. You know, I would just like not have the patience for that shit at all. But I realized,
I realized
like, this is where it's better for other people to do that stuff, because it wasn't my thing and I never enjoyed it. And also, you have to be, forget about the voiceovers. You have to be pretty clever at invoicing and at doing all the paperwork. There's a lot of that. And, you know, it's little bits of money here and there, unless you're a hugely successful voiceover artist, and I know you are. But for the little guys, it's kind of like you do an ad here, or you do an ad there, and you're like invoicing for this much. And then it's many of these little invoices, and they do add up. But I just hated the admin of it, and I was like, nah, you know what? Don't worry about me, guys. You do this.
The man's a chemical engineer, Gareth.
He's a genius.
Listen.
No, he's a genius.
No, that is top five most difficult degrees in university.
Correct.
That is for real, for real. Those guys are for real.
Are you still in touch with Simpiwe and Lesejo?
Yes. Occasionally we still link up now and again. Lesejo is still like pushing banking quite a lot, but he's appearing on ads every now and again as well. So, which is a cool thing. I think a little bit of me rubbed off on him. So he's not 100% into the banking space. Yeah. He's still like, on and off in terms of that, but he's definitely doing very well. And I could say the same for Simpiwe. Look, Lesejo always joked that he would be the one to marry last. He'll marry only when he's like 45 or something old like that. And it's kind of happened, because me and Simpiwe are married, and he's still out there.
I didn't know you were married. Congratulations, man. That's very, very cool. Good man.
Thanks
a lot. Yeah, are there plans for kids on the way already, or is that still a little way down the track?
Yeah, that's a little bit down the track. Yeah. We just want to kind of enjoy the company first and just kind of get to know each other before
we
introduce another factor.
You guys did me a huge favor a little while ago, too, because you got me to visit my old university for the first time since I had left there. Because you remember we did some kind of event that you put together, you and Simpiwe and Lesego. And I think you got me and DJ Sbu.
Slubi Mboya.
And Slubi. And you got us all to do like a little talk at the university. I was just so impressed by the fact that you'd arranged these things. And, you guys were still students, really. And it was tremendous to see like how you got this shit together. And you really are exemplary guys. No, it's a great pleasure to see you again. I every time I get reunited with somebody from those first two or three years of Cliff Central, I'm always impressed at how we managed to find and how the people who managed to find us were such quality people. All of them ended up going on to do amazing things. I mean, I think next week Tumi Morake is going to join us, and she's had an incredible career and continues to. Somizi started off with a show on our channel. We have great people like Brent Lindekue, who went on to do all kinds of things too. Just a really nice lineup of very, very smart, impressive human beings who, without doubt, all of them, have gone on to show the world what they're made of. It's really good. It makes me feel very proud because at some point, and I think this is true even for parents, which I'm not a parent, but in some way I feel like a parent must feel when they see their kids go on to do great things. And every time I hear your voice anywhere, I'm always like, yeah, that's our Weza, He's still, look at him killing it out there. It's great stuff.
Wow. Thank you so much. And you know what, that also just says something about you and your vision, that as a person, when you've got an idea to be daring, to launch something, to create a platform, that it won't only be for you, but it will actually give permission to others to launch and create their own things from that as well. So, props to you for actually daring and getting fired, or so that you can come and start your own thing,
just for the record, because every time people say that, I have to tear it up. I resigned and started Cliff Central on my own terms. Nobody fired me. They were the most shocked. I left them with their lunch in their hands and nothing else to bargain on. Anyway, here's Charles, who says, that wasn't bad, Gareth, the voiceover, but can you make it sound a little more purple? I mean,
that's exactly what happens. Exactly.
Michael says, just like the old days where there's an A&R guy sitting in the corner of a recording studio trying to tell the band they need less guitar. Well, that used to happen too in the music business. Every time there was a recording, there's always some person who thinks they've got the magic. There's Phil Spector, obviously famously from The Wall of Sound. He was a brilliant, brilliant record producer. And he used to produce some of those kind of just post-Motown bands. And he was incredible as a producer. And he would hear things, and he'd be able to pick up on what was missing in any song. And that's such a skill. But please believe me, most of those people in these recordings, they were not Phil Spector. Tracy said, do you remember that Cell C woman's voice from a few years back?
Cell C for yourself.
Yeah, of course, remember her.
Why does it sound like it was you?
No, it wasn't. No, but I actually, I think she was my French lecturer at university's daughter. Somebody told me.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure if it's true, but that's what someone said to me. Tabo says, oh dear, it's a sausage fest this morning. All right, sorry, Tabo.
Untapped talent.
Yeah.
It's a full circle.
Exactly. Yeah. The flippin' cowbell. Yeah. Tracy's also bringing up here that there was that scene in SNL with Will Ferrell and Jimmy Fallon and Christopher Walken with the cowbell. You know, there's the producer, and he says, I need more cowbell. That's what they do in those recordings. It's pretty good. All right. And you guys were from Pretoria like I was, right? You were all at Tux.
Yeah.
That's where you studied studied engineering at university.
Yeah. And it was like a long trip coming to Cliff Central every single time. But I think one of the craziest was, and that's where I really saw that man, maybe I'm really passionate about this, was when it was during that that study break show, you know, where, you know, it's our first opportunity. We're still so excited to have this and all of that. And now I have to go and work vacation work at Sasol in Secunda. So now I'm in Secunda. I'm stuck there in the middle of nowhere.
Hellhole. Isn't that the most terrible place in the world? I mean, I know you're not a mean person. No. Like Weza, we've spoken about this once before. People who've never been to Secunda don't understand that there's an actual, you know, Lord of the Rings is Mordor. There's an actual place like that. It's got like chimneys with fire coming out of the top, and it's got a cloud of like black soot and smoke hanging over it the whole time. You can't drink the water because it's so filthy from all the pollution of the industrial plant. And it's just a terrible place. Terrible place.
Yeah. Look, at that time, I really tried to look at all the positives. You know, I'm grateful that I got this bursary and everything. But,
what a shithole.
Man,
now what a shithole.
You know, and the air stinks, but I'm trying to be like, no, it's going to get better. You know, you really try your best to be positive even in those circumstances.
I saw people coming out of the industrial plant there, and they actually had hunchbacks, and their knuckles were dragging on the floor. They were drooling, and their spit was burning through the tar of the road, and they were complete monsters, mutants. Horrible place. Jesus.
Your perspective is always so interesting, Karen. I try to look at their shoes. I'm like, hey, man, those are shiny shoes. Anyway, so coming back to the story is that it was Thursday, and Thursdays always represented my show on Cliff Central.
Yeah.
Man, but how am I going to do it now? Because, I mean, I'm supposed to be here like from 7:30 in the morning all the way to like 4:30. And I was like, nah, I'm going to act like I just went to lunch early or something. So there I was. I snuck out of the office, kind of left my laptop there so that it looks like, oh, no, he's still here. He's just, you know, maybe he just went to another part of the plant or something. And then I got into the car and boom, there I was off onto the highway. Look, this is impulsive, unplanned. I'm like, I'll be back quick. Let me do this. Let me go have my show in Joburg.
Yeah.
I'll come back and continue working as if everything was normal. So there
and
I am.
And that's
on the
opposite
highway.
Of a chemical engineer, by the way. My old man's a chemical engineer, and I know a lot of them. They are the complete opposite of impulsive.
Exactly.
Because it's a long drive, too, from Secunda. It must have taken you at least an hour and a half, maybe even 2 hours. Did they figure it out?
They didn't. They didn't, actually.
God, right.
Well, one end is you're just a vac work student, so nothing critical has to come from you. It's just kind of to see you sit there and rot away in silence, you know? So there I was on the highway, guys, and I had forgotten that, oh, shucks, there's toll gates. I don't have any money.
So what did you do?
So I got into a toll gate, and I'm thinking, shucks, oh, man, I'm going to have to turn back. And it's kind of like a one-way, you know, like toll gates are.
You're in the queue.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, oh, man. And I'm starting to search every pocket under the seat. I'm trying to find everything because it's like, I don't know if it was like 7 rand 50 or something. And I couldn't find that 7 rand 50. I got to 3 rand. That's as much as I got to. And I'm thinking, okay, what am I going to do? And then I found this old card. You know, like when you open a business and you just never use it.
Yes.
And it's just, you just had like $100 in the card just to keep the card active.
Wow.
And I thought, shucks, I don't even know the PIN of this card. But let me just try and see what will happen. So I hand it in and I just hold my breath and think, please don't ask for a PIN. Please don't. And then I just see the green light. I'm like, yes, let's go.
Wow.
And that's how I got to Cliff Central that day.
You must have shat yourself. That's such a great story because, you know, those little moments where you're desperate. Like I remember when I was at Varsity too. There was bugger all money in my account, right? And then I suddenly had to pay for something, and I had nothing on me. And someone, I didn't even know this person. They're like, no, here's the 10 Rand or whatever is that you need to do this. It's amazing how you never forget those incidents. You're like, oh my God, I'm going to make sure that I don't leave my wallet anywhere, or that I make sure I've got some money somewhere in case this shit happens again, because it's so, your whole world could come crashing down. I mean, what would you have done if they wouldn't have let you through the toll gate, you know?
Man, shucks. Yeah, that I would have had to turn back right there and then. And, you know, there was a second toll gate, but now I had confidence. I whipped out that gold card again. I'm like, card man.
So a couple of comments here from people. Martel says, Secunda is my hometown. I've moved to Durban. I will never go back there. Well done. Well done, Martel. Yeah, that's a good decision. Wezza won't remember me, says Vince, but we were in the same engineering class. Good to see he's nailing the voice thing. See, one of your ex-engineering mates.
Shout out to Vince, chemical engineer in Grimsel.
There we go.
Yeah.
Jean says Secunda is Sasselberg on roids, and Barry says the air is so dirty in Secunda that the birds cough you awake in the morning.
Oh my goodness.
it's like having a grandmother with emphysema coughing outside your window every day.
Jeez, man. Yeah.
Jean says, I remember the Springboks used to train a lot in Secunda back in the day. It explains why Bucky's Buerta was the way he was. Oh, that's so good. Michael says, this is interesting, Wezza. You can comment on this. They managed to make auto-tune for singers, but they could never make the auto-charisma for radio. You can't fake an interested voice for very long. Oh, yeah. Is that true in your mind? Like, you can't fake a voice.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, even nowadays, they're trying to bring in automated voiceovers, you know, to be the voiceover, but they don't have the charisma, the human element.
Me think of something. So this is something that I cannot stand, and I don't know how to explain it, and I've never really brought it up on the show before, but now we've got the guy here who can help us. You know these social media posts on Instagram or on TikTok or whatever where they have a voice that goes, he couldn't believe his girlfriend was there. You know, those things drive me crazy. Like, who does that shit? Who records those completely automated, robotic, stupid voices where they go, she went for the glass of water, and it spilled on her lap, and now everyone thinks she pissed herself. You know those voices?
Yes.
Fucking hate those things more than you can believe. It drives me insane. I cannot understand why anyone forwards any of those files. If you ever get anything from me with one of those voiceovers, with one of those automated, robotic, terrible, what do they call them? Like narrations almost. What would you say about
them?
Those things drive me up the wall. They spoil a good video.
So that's good. You need to make a petition, and then a bunch of you need to say that so that they can just cancel it. Because right now the wave, especially in America, is getting a bunch of voice artists to say a lot of words, like random words, so that they can build this database of, let's say, an engine that can say anything. But then it ends up sounding the way those things sound. Mm. It's not really emotional. It's not really... It's not really even relevant to what you're talking about at the time.
I can't stand it. And maybe because I've been in media and in radio, and you know, I kind of know a little bit about it. Those voices just drive me to drink, man. It's the strangest thing. It immediately it kicks me such a bad reaction up inside me when I hear those voices. Oh
yeah, and that's because. When it's recorded, like when you're sitting there in the booth, they would say, okay, let me just show you how the numbers won't work. They would say the numbers, but say them all with the same inflection and the same tone so that we can put them anywhere in any order, and it wouldn't sound like that was the end or the beginning of a sentence. So you would normally say 1, 2, 3, 4, or like Gareth, Cliff. Show. So now the thing when it's put together, it's like, welcome to the Gareth Cliff Show.
Yeah, and it sounds like
that's
a machine.
Not really.
But I reckon the best voiceover job you could get is to be like Siri or Alexa, because there must be 1,000 things you have to say a day, and they must contract you for like millions to do that stuff. It must be incredible money.
I hope it is millions, because and it can be, but the problem is that sometimes some voice artists don't know what the rate should be. Yeah. So what they end up doing is they just kind of say yes to whatever you're offering. So empowerment, like just knowing how the international or even the local rate cards work, those things always help a lot.
Here's a nice comment from Justice Lesilo, who says, Wes, I remember I tagged you in a post or job advert at SABC and you got it and DM'd me about it. You're so good, you deserve it. That's very nice.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. You know, these type of tags and DMs sometimes is what ends up getting me a job, you know. So what happened with one of the SABC stuff, and I'm not sure if he's let me just see, Wes, I remember I tagged you on a post job advert at SABC and you got a DM me about it. Yeah. So I think I think Justice might be the one who tagged me on an ad where they were looking for SABC One's new voiceover artist and something like that. And I looked at it and I thought, competition? I don't know, hey? Because they're going to want me to compete and then they're going to want me to get likes and stuff. And I hate that stuff where they kind of, you know, make you go and do a lot of social media campaigning before they give you a job. And I thought, I'm not going to do this. And then a bunch of people came to me for advice for the same thing. And they would even come to my studio and I would help them record things and I would help them enter the actual competition until I thought, Wes, maybe you should actually just, you know, do this. And I thought, no, I don't want to find myself working too hard and getting something like this and then they can exploit me. Because what if they've already picked their people? These guys can be corrupt. And I thought, okay.
So you did
it. Okay, one more time, Wes. So I ended up doing it, okay? But I picked my, I just picked a take where I was just teaching someone how to do it so that they can do it. And I just said, okay, I want this, but I don't want it that bad. Let me just use my demos that are not that great. And let me see what happens.
You still got it.
And then
so
I actually got the gig.
All right, listen, we've got to get to some headlines. I just want to look at a couple of big stories that are going on around us. This is from the BBC this morning. They say cows can be toilet trained in order to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. How do you like that? Can you believe that? Yeah.
In order to release greenhouse gas emissions.
Well, you see, cows are responsible for a lot of the methane in the atmosphere, and that's from farts.
Uh-huh.
So in the study, which obviously took place in Germany, that's the only place they do things like this, scientists trained animals to use a designated toilet. Their urine was then collected and treated. The ammonia from cow's urine turns into a greenhouse gas, nitrous oxide, when it's mixed with the soil. So worldwide, about 10% of all greenhouse gas emissions from human activities comes from cows. Researchers attempted to teach 16 cows how to use the toilet and dubbed it the Moo-Loo at a farm that was owned by a research institute for farm animal biology. The animals were placed in the Moo-Loo pen and were rewarded with food for urinating in a specific place. After this, they were then placed in an area next to the Moo-Loo and rewarded for walking into the pen and urinating. Wow. I'm sure this is going to save the planet. I'm sure this is going to reduce carbon emissions and we're going to have a much healthier Earth. I mean, training cows that you're pretty much either training to produce milk or meat. Great move, guys. I hope you're proud of yourselves, dummies. But, you know, you can imagine like some activist in like Germany is excited about this because this is going to save the world. Some complete lunatic who really thinks that that's something that's possible. Anyway, good luck to them.
Although we do need to do something with cows. We bred them. So, like, everything has a consequence. So, you know, so get them to fart somewhere, you know?
Well.
That's what you got to do.
I don't like winter.
I want steak. I want steak. If my cows are
I had a steak last night. I don't give a damn about the planet if I can eat steak. I really don't. I'm not going to bullshit you. And I also don't
care. It ends up becoming one of those free-range chickens, you know? So you'll get to Woolworths and it'll say potty-trained cows. So that you're like, hey, I'll take the potty trained ones. It's an extra $100 per kilo, but I'll take that.
Yeah, you'll end up with some some do-gooder who's like buying the potty-trained cow meat rather than the other kind of meat. That's exactly what will happen. And then this is interesting. SASSA recipients are not going to pay for water and electricity services if the EFF managed to run any municipality, because that's one of the things they're promising people. You know, I'm always impressed with the way politicians will promise you the world and then deliver nothing. I mean, Julius Malema and his EFF comrades, they've said basically if you're a SASSA recipient, in other words, if you're among the poorest of the poor who's getting a social grant, the EFF will make sure that the suburbs will subsidize you. You know, just take from the rich and give to the poor, because that's how we work things out. That's how we make it better. So obviously a great election strategy, because a whole lot of poor people are going, yeah, we don't want to pay for electricity and water. Let someone else pay for us. This is what you do if you're in politics. The commitment made by the EFF when they addressed 3,000 people at Bopheleng's Ward 6 in the Vaal, which also comprised a neighboring informal settlement. Malema was on the campaign trail in areas of the Vaal in which he urged voters to cast their ballot for his party. You know that the EFF do not run a single ward in South Africa. They are not the majority party in any single ward in this country. So for all of their loudness and their batting above their weight and all that kind of thing, these are not serious players. And don't ever be convinced that they are. You can promise people the world, but that doesn't mean you have to deliver as a politician. The Taliban have thanked the world for the aid that they've promised them and have urged the U.S. to show some heart. The Taliban. Okay, let's just stop laughing and let's try and understand this. So the Taliban on Tuesday, thanked the world for pledging hundreds of millions of dollars in emergency aid to Afghanistan. I'm sure they thanked them, and I'm sure that came from the bottom of their hearts, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. I donated it. I donated at KFC, you know, when they force you or try and guilt you into the 2 rand thing.
Add hope.
Yeah, that's it. I said, no, I want to take away hope. Send my 2 rand to the Taliban.
Correct. And that's what you can do. So apparently there was a donor conference. I would love to meet the people who go to these things. They must be the worst people on planet Earth. A donor conference in Geneva on Monday saw countries promise a total of $1.2 billion in aid for Afghanistan, which was taken over by the hardline Islamist group last month in a lightning offensive that took retreating U.S. troops by surprise. And Joe Biden, he said it was all part of the plan, of course, but Joe Biden doesn't know what he did yesterday afternoon. Afghanistan, already heavily dependent on aid, is facing an economic crisis with new authorities unable to pay salaries and food prices soaring. So who thinks the Taliban are going to do the right thing with all of this money that's being promised to them? Put your hands up. Let me see who you are.
It depends what you think the right thing is.
Well,
until I've heard their side, Gareth, because we live in this time now.
Right.
Until the Taliban has sent me their 10-page proposal on how they see the next 15 years for the children of Afghanistan, I'm not going to... listen, let me tell you something. My mother lived in Geneva. That is the biggest bunch of dickheads you've ever met in your life, right?
Absolutely.
What happens there is everyone who's gone to... I mean, Harvard, and it's not even the business people. It's very much the political students. So, Sciences Po, if you're French. It is so disgusting, and they all think they're so smart, and they do sweet blow. It is so boring there.
Exactly right.
Nice lake, though.
Nice lake. Nice lake, and they sell lots of watches there. That's pretty much it. Here's something.
And they don't like Italians. They don't like Italians.
I just want to hear both of your opinions on this. You're both engineering students. So mining sector has shed 23,000 jobs between 2012 and 2019. So this is a scary number, because those 23,000 jobs, obviously we need them in this country more than anywhere else. Mining employment stood at over 514,000 people in 2019, and that's down from 538,000 people back in 2012. So obviously they had these job cuts because the price of gold goes up and down, and uranium ore mining is one of the other areas that we've lost so many jobs, because obviously the world doesn't need as much uranium. You don't need a huge amount of it. We have uranium mines in this country, but you need less of it to generate the power in a power plant, for example, than you did before. So the sector has bled jobs. The total income for the mining industry has actually grown, though. So we can use less people to do more mining. And because the prices are going up and down the whole time, we base it on that and nothing else. This is just kind of a consequence of how mining changes, right? It's not like these mining bosses have decided we're going to, on purpose, cut people's jobs and make them poor.
And just to be clear, I'm not as smart as Wes. I did chemistry. That's a whole different world.
Okay.
Like what I did and what he did.
We'll take
my dad did what Wes did. Yeah.
All right.
I'm nowhere near as smart as him.
Come on, guys. So Gareth, you're very right. Here's the problem is that we normally use history to inform our moves for the future. Right. So when we were, for instance, in school, we were using how booming the engineering and the mining space was to inform what we're going to be studying for the next 4 years. And by the time we had finished, the jobs were not quite there anymore.
Yeah.
And it had already started. People had already started being, you know, retrenched or cut off and so on. And downsizing had already started to occur. In fact, our professors even called us into an auditorium and said, guys, you might have to start thinking of working in banks and in other spaces because the mines are not what they used to be. So, you know, with more and more technology entering the space, there's more things that are automated, more things where they don't necessarily need three engineers. They could just do with one. So there's a lot of that happening too. But I think the biggest lesson is that you shouldn't be using the past to inform how the future is going to go, because there's so much technology and so much growth that happens that you should really try to extrapolate.
This is such a good point.
Using, you know,
this is such a good point because, you know, the mining engineers, who are a very specialized group of people, and they're very well educated. They get paid well if they end up working for a good company. But those are not the people that most of us think about when we think about job losses. We think about the people in the mines. But of course, it obviously affects the people at the top of the salary scale as well, because you don't need 10 of these guys in your mining business. You need 5 now, because also those 5 are expected to be so much more efficient. And I was always told at university, and I'm sure you were too when you started, oh, go and study engineering because we'll never run out of the need for engineers. And in some ways that's still true. Because especially in places like mechanical and civil and chemical and electrical engineering, frankly, those are still jobs that are very much required by the economy. You know, you always see these are the top 10 jobs that people are needed in South Africa. And engineering usually takes up at least 5 or 6 of those. So it's still a good thing.
You know, there's a book that Bill Gates wanted people to read back in the day. It's called How to Lie with Stats, or How to Lie with Statistics. You know, so when you look at statistics in one angle, it looks like, ooh, this is clearly in demand.
Yeah.
So for us, it's like this. You know, there's a ratio of people to engineers that is a benchmark as to how we are supposed to be doing versus how we are doing.
Right.
So if you look at first world countries, they've got a very good ratio engineers to population, and we don't. We have like, let's say some have like 1 for every 300 or 350, and we have 1 for every 10 or 12,000 or something like that. So because of that, the government is like, ooh, we clearly need more engineers. So now the popular opinion becomes we need engineers.
The
inquiry is, who makes engineers? And then they say, universities, they make engineers. Then they go to university and say, university, why aren't you making the engineers that we are needing in this country? Then they say, well, we don't have enough space. Then they say, all right, we are going to make a budget where we are going to build more facilities so that we can get more engineers. We will start producing engineers in our economy.
Yeah,
so then they do that, right? So they gave University of Pretoria a bunch of money, and they built these big engineering buildings and labs and stuff. They did the same with all the other top 5 universities as well.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? Now we're pumping out 10 times the engineering graduates and BSc and grads that we've ever done before. But What has not changed is that Sossel is still Sossel, and there hasn't been a clone of Sossel in the last 20 years. So the big companies that were employing engineers are still the same guys, and they haven't grown in capacity.
But you see, this is the big failure of like a central planning way of approaching the economy. And the Soviet Union taught most of us, I would hope, clearly there are lots of governments in the world that didn't learn this lesson, that when your government is making these calls, oh, we need so many engineers, and they're creating jobs for certain people in their heads, they forget that unless there's demand in the economy and unless there's supply in the economy, and those things are very much determined by the market, not by the government, you're really creating an artificial system. And then you flood the market with engineers, and suddenly none of those people can get jobs. And not only are they then pissed off that the government tried to create these jobs where there weren't any, but they also can't find work, so they end up doing something completely different. The market always wins. I wish people would just stop trying to fight this. It's always the truth.
And great point. It's why China is going to win, because to an extent I agree with you, but because our plans are always, let's produce for the next 10 years. You know, a president generally sits 10 years. Is that China says, no, we think in 1,000 years. So Xi Jinping doesn't matter. He just happens to be the bus driver now. And that's built into it.
They think maybe 20, which is more than, that's 20 years more than our government thinks.
Well, I mean, when you hear of how the Japanese and sort of the Eastern politicians talk, they don't talk in 20 years. They talk about dynasties. I mean, you hear, so, I mean, this is reading some of the literature from back in the day. They talk about hundreds of years, Gary.
I don't think you've chosen a good example here, because China had this one-child policy. Now they've got five men for every woman in their country. They're complete disaster. It's a disaster. You can't trust any of these idiots. They're politicians, and politicians are not qualified in anything. Remember, you don't have to have a degree in politics to go into politics. You don't have to even be very smart. You just have to win a popularity competition. And then you sit, most of the people in this country are happy to just get a job sitting on their asses in parliament and earning a salary. They're not sure what they have to do for that. These are not the people you can entrust your planning to.
Maybe we need to swap things around, because you remember and make... and we could say maybe if you're under 18, you can vote for who becomes president, because think of it in high school and primary school. Usually the kid with the good marks and the smart one and the one with the leadership traits ends up becoming, you know, the head boy, but not necessarily the popular one who's just the jock. They're literally good at nothing, but they're good at just.
But how
you
do
know,
we do that? How do we
smooth talking?
We can't even elect good mayors in our cities. We've got a municipal and local election coming up this year, and you know what's going to happen, right? They're going to be a couple of real creeps who climb into important positions because they've got friends in high places, or they secure a lot of campaign funding, or they promise people free water and electricity and they never deliver. You know what's going to happen. That's what always happens.
Yeah.
We haven't been able
maybe
to solve
we must,
this.
Yeah, maybe we should just accept that we are all screwed. Look how bad we are at picking partners. 50% of the world's getting divorced. Maybe we're just all shitheads.
That's right. I mean, you know? Most people can't even look after their own bedroom, let alone worry about the state. So you ask them, you're going to ask someone who can't look after their own bedroom, you're going to tell them that they must choose who the mayor of Johannesburg is? Please, do me a favor. No wonder we're in shit. But DK does agree with you that the Chinese are producing great engineers, and Bulelo is spot on. They will win. I don't doubt that they will win, but they're not foolproof either. Their own policies have resulted in huge amounts of shit for them. You know that. You can see it. Yeah. Anyway, someone says here that this is quite interesting. When the Three Gorges Dam goes, China will be too distracted to win anything. And you know that those kinds of disasters do happen in China. I saw they blew up like 26 buildings last week.
Yeah.
Did you see those videos on social media?
Yeah, that was crazy. They all came down at the same time.
Yeah.
It almost amazing. Looked like the Taliban had come to them.
Right. I thought this
allegedly. 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 Please, let's not down talk the Taliban until we've heard their side.
Because of course, they're a legitimate government, right? Let's give them a chance because they've got such a great track record. I thought the same thing. I saw these buildings coming down. I was like, wow, this Taliban, they're really getting back into action. All right, let's turn our attention.
But it's crazy.
Let's turn our attention to something we like to pay attention to every single week. And the reason that we do that is because there are many of us who have got skin in the game when it comes to cryptocurrency. There was a lot of really good news the last time we spoke to Sean Saunders. I think we were hitting like $50,000 for a Bitcoin. It slipped back quite substantially. In fact, last night it was at like 45,000 or even 44,000. And then I woke up this morning, it's back to 47. So it's always, you. Maybe you're a good omen, Sean. Maybe that's what it is. Whenever we get you on the show, it seems like the price is recovering nicely. How are you? Sean Saunders from Revix, everybody.
Good morning, Gareth. Good morning, guys. I guess it's just me coming on the show that's determining the Bitcoin price, right? So buy every Tuesday, sell off the show on the Wednesday.
But I mean,
vicious sell-off, guys.
Yeah, sorry. Stranger things do happen in crypto. Like we've seen what Elon Musk's tweets can do to the price of Bitcoin. We've also seen what you were talking about last week when you introduced your new Solana offering. We saw that you know, all over the world, people were suddenly really excited about Solana and how it's going to replace some of Ethereum's market share. How did that work out, by the way, before we get into all the other stuff?
Solana's actually pulled back a little bit from last week, but what we saw last week was actually a really, call it vicious sell-off across the market for no particular reason.
Mm-hmm.
And that caused quite a few cryptocurrencies to pull back between 10 to 15%. And as you said, they've sort of moved back up. I mean, Solana is going to be bouncing about, I'm talking like up 30% one month, down 20% or 30% the next month. And I think the longer term price trend is going to be up for Solana in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because it's a blockchain with a lot of user adoption. A lot of applications are being built on top of it. And there's a lot of developers just moving from the likes of Ethereum and Cardano to Solana. So when you've got those sort of fundamentals, it's not really a case of if it'll go up over the longer term. It's sort of more a case of when. And is that a year or 2 years, 5 years? I mean, no one really knows on that front. Hence why we always say sort of take a longer term view when it comes to crypto.
Do you have,
but yeah, the last week has some, been.
Sorry, do you have some Solana in your portfolio?
I do. I have bought every cryptocurrency that we've launched on the platform. I personally have bought myself.
Awesome.
I mean, you can't, you kind of, also when I talk on podcasts like this, you know, you need to kind of have skin in the game to, I don't know, be more passionate about the subject.
Right.
I mean, I follow it a little bit more when I've got money behind it, right?
That's why I asked you, because I mean, if you don't buy it, then who? Then why should we? That's the thinking.
No, 100%. I mean, every single product that gets launched on the platform, generally speaking, I've traded for a few months beforehand. The team's also got their hands wet, you know, doing a variety of different things with it. I mean, we've even tried to utilize the networks. So, you know, if we actually make a transaction on Solana, let's say we use one of the different, I'm not going to go into too much jargon here, but like one of the NFT platforms that are on the network, you know, how much does that cost? How good was that user experience? What does the adoption look like? So that's been an interesting sort of network to sort of see come out of nowhere.
All right.
And
so you
I still think it's a really good investment opportunity.
You just repeated it now. It's come out of nowhere. And you said just now that there was no particular reason that there was this 10 to 15% sell-off last week. These things make people nervous. And this is why a lot of the old financial institutions say, oh, stay away from cryptocurrency. But what do you think? Because there are some things that we can absolutely bargain on and things that we can look forward and hope to see come to fruition with some degree of actual research and experience. So when you talk about what the next major factors could be that drive the crypto market higher, what do you think those are?
So there's a few different types, I suppose, of events that can occur. The one of which is that you get another wealthy investor that comes on board. So you're talking the likes of an Elon Musk, right? Let's say, you know, Jeff Bezos comes on board. They always seem to be having, excuse the term here, but like a big dick swinging context,
right.
Contest where they sort of want to be like, well, listen, my rocket's bigger than your rocket. I'm going to get to the moon before you do, you know, all of that jazz. So if another investor like that comes on board and they put a few million dollars, even billion dollars into Bitcoin, Ethereum, or one of the other cryptocurrencies, that's going to drive the price higher. And you're seeing this every day with, I guess, well-known players in the investment world. With new players coming on board, their investment firms buying into crypto. I think another big name sort of public figure could really drive this market higher. I think something else as well, which is on the cards, and there's so many different applications with the SEC currently for this, but is a Bitcoin ETF. And that probably will be followed quite closely thereafter by an Ethereum ETF. And what this does really is that this makes it really easy for every single person who has a brokerage account globally to buy into Bitcoin. So a lot of people are hesitant to come to the likes of a Revix or a Coinbase or another, you know, reputable platform. I suppose there's also the less reputable ones out there. Because of sort of the stigma around crypto, it's like, well, how does this all work? It's weird. You know, how do I get exposure to this area? Right. And an ETF would essentially provide exposure for the sort of more mainstream investors. The other thing to note here is that hedge funds, pension funds, endowments, for them, they've got a pretty tight mandate. They're not allowed to invest in anything that's not a registered security. And an ETF would become a registered security. So it essentially would be taking Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever cryptocurrency and putting it into a financial wrapper, into a financial legal wrapper, really. That structure would enable these different institutions to buy into it. That's another big driver. I think something else we maybe mustn't discount as well is that if we have another COVID-19 wave, and this is a global wave that occurs, and you get the money printing machines back on and they start printing more money, I mean, I'm telling you right now, you're going to see gold and Bitcoin in particular, really go on another bull run.
Right.
Not necessarily, I think, a big probability of that occurring, but it certainly could. And then I think probably the last point to note, which seems, I guess, a bit counterintuitive for a lot of people, but something just to be aware of, is when Bitcoin moves up higher, right, it gets more public attention. And that means more people get on board. And it just becomes a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy, right?
Yes.
Like the bigger it gets, the less risky in a weird way it becomes. I mean, I can say right now that Bitcoin at $47,000 right now feels a lot less risky than when it was at $5,000 a few years ago. And I think when it's sitting at $100,000 or even, you know, $500,000, again, Bitcoin bull here, I think you're going to see this being a less risky sort of asset. And that's another thing to think about is, you know, as this moves higher and gets bigger, it becomes more attractive for a lot of investors.
I love it. Now, you've got something that happens on Revix that I want you to explain to people quickly. You can actually refer people, and there is a chance for you to earn up to 10,000 Rand just by referring your friends to Revix. Tell us how this works.
So, yeah, currently, if you're a Revix customer, you can refer friends to Revix, and you earn 300 Rand per referral. And you earn those in points, but you can redeem those points directly for Bitcoin. So it's it's exactly 300 Rand per person that you refer to Revix who successfully makes an investment. Now, what we're doing on Friday, because we seem to just like promotions on Fridays, is that we are going to be launching a Refer a Friends campaign where you can earn double the rewards by referring a friend. So if you refer a friend, you're not going to get 300 Rand equivalent in Bitcoin. You're going to get 600 Rand starting from this Friday. And that's just a nice way for us to, you know, kind of ask our community to help grow our community, really, right?
That's fantastic.
So that's as straightforward as it is. What's also pretty neat is when you refer someone, and this is currently on the platform today, the person you refer gets 200 Rand in their Revix account when they make their first investment. So this is regardless of the promotion. It's just something that people don't realize that we're actually giving away 500 Rand, 300 Rand for you currently, 600 Rand from Friday, and then 200 Rand for the person you refer. It's something that's actually working really well for us. Currently about 20% of all new signups are coming through our referral program. So we just sort of want to lean into this a little bit more and see how it goes.
I love it. Lebang is saying, oh my God, Sean. She loves you. So she's obviously missing not being on the show today to talk to you about this. Just quickly, there's a question from Hugo, and I know I can throw these at you without preparing you on them. So please ask Sean if we can transfer Bitcoin directly in and out of our Revix account. Can I send Bitcoin to my Revix wallet and out to my private Bitcoin wallet?
You can, definitely. So you can go create a deposit, a Bitcoin deposit on the Revix platform. We'll give you a temporary Bitcoin deposit address. That's valid for 60 minutes. If you transfer outside of that 60 minutes, I mean, we still receive the Bitcoin. It just means that we take a little longer to process it. And then when you want to withdraw funds, we process withdrawals 3 times a day, and it'll be processed out to your private Bitcoin wallets if you'd like.
Very good. And just to wrap it up this morning, Michael says, being diversified is one of the benefits of crypto. The other is being decentralized. Keeping money in a bank with the current crypto savings schemes now available is a waste of money. Make your money work. I think that's a really good note to end it on. Sean, you're making us you're making us all much more fluent in the language of crypto.
Yes. Gareth, one more thing. Can I add this in?
Yeah.
Because this is something that's a little different.
Yeah, go on.
And I want this to be exclusive for Cliff Central listeners. And Yeah, it's something that I'm just going to experiment with today. I was kind of umming and ahhing as to whether I should say this. So we are currently a profitable business. We've grown about 15 times since this time last year. We've got pretty big, nice, beautiful Amazing. Offices in Cape Town. We try to look really fancy on the Zoom game. And we're busy closing this new funding round. Mm-hmm. And there's a few million rand that we have left over. And I'm saying, well, hold, you know, instead of getting these other VCs on board, venture capital firms that come on board,
right.
and, you know, they invest in Revex, they've never actually used our platform before, they're institutions. Mm-hmm. Why don't we try and extend this to our customers or right. to people that have heard us on the show for the last 3.5 years?
Okay.
So if you'd be interested in investing in Revex, and that's not investing in one of our products, actually investing in us as a company,
yes.
You'd need to make an investment in our UK entity. So you must just make sure that you can actually move funds offshore. You haven't used up your capital allowance or anything. But if you'd be interested in doing that, we are looking for, I suppose, a handful of investors, maybe 5 or 6 different investors to come on board. And we'd be looking for roughly around about R1 million minimum investment. But it would be just interesting to see. I would love to just see if investors sure. are listening to this that would show interest in
Absolutely.
Us.
Let's see if anybody's keen on that, because it does sound like you've got the immediate track record to be able to call up, and people are looking for interesting places to put their money. So there, to Michael's point. All right, nice one. Thanks, Sean. Good to see you. We'll check in with you awesome. In a week's time. Very good. Sean Sanders, everybody.
Guys. Yeah.
Very Thanks. Good. So there we go. There's some options for you this morning. I mean, if you're looking to make a big investment, then this could be something interesting for you. Get hold of them and send Sean an email. Obviously, all the Revex details can be found on cliffcentral.com, or just go straight to them at revex.com, www.revix.com. Okay, when we come back, lots of good stuff. And don't forget, a little later today, we've got that interview that I did with the First Lady, Dr. Tsepo Motsepe, which will be on at 8 o'clock this morning. You don't want to miss it. We'll be playing the video out live this morning at 8 o'clock. We've also got two other guests joining us, Christine Steyn and Colin Mtunu, who are co-authors of Wendy Needs to Hustle. And we'll tell you about that in a little while. That's all on the way. CliffCentral.com on a Wednesday.
CliffCentral.com